Today, the two Senate races in Georgia that could determine the course of Joe Biden's presidency.
Hello, Atlanta! It's great to be back. It really is.
Having spoken to a few people in recent weeks, it feels as if the election has never ended here in Georgia.
Khushbu Shah is the editor-in-chief of the journalism nonprofit The Fuller Project. She's based in Atlanta, which got a visit from the president-elect earlier this week.
Folks, you know, you all did something extraordinary in November.
I think a lot of people in Georgia had expected this never-ending 4 years of campaigning to end November 3rd. That clearly is not the case in Georgia.
Well, guess what? Now you're going to have to do it again.
The stakes couldn't be higher for both parties in the runoff elections that have begun this week in Georgia, because the results will determine which party ultimately controls the Senate. Already, early voting turnout is breaking records, and all eyes are on Georgia. From The Guardian, I'm Mythili Rao. Today in Focus, Georgia's runoff and a historic battle to control the Senate. Khushbu, next month, voters will have the chance to choose not one, but two new senators. And it's a big deal because at the moment, the Republicans have 50 seats in the Senate and the Democrats have 48. So these two seats are absolutely crucial. And both these races are very heated. So let's start with Republican incumbent David Perdue and his Democratic challenger, John Ossoff. Tell me a little bit about them both.
Senator Perdue, you won the coin flip, so let's start with you.
So Senator David Perdue is the incumbent.
Donald Trump gave us the best economic turnaround in U.S. history, y'all.
He's a very strong Trump ally and was an early Senate endorser of the president's 2016 campaign.
You know, my mom and dad were public school teachers in Middle Georgia. I grew up working on our family farms. I worked my way through Georgia Tech and went on to have a business career and became
He's a management consultant
CEO and created tens of thousands of American jobs.
He's sort of the prototype of a very typical Republican politician.
Mr. Ossoff, you now have a minute 30 for your opening statement.
He's running against John Ossoff.
The 33-year-old says his age and fresh perspectives are assets.
He's quite young, very ambitious.
Look at what is happening in Washington right now, Gabrielle. The last thing anyone says is that we're in the mess we're in because there's too many young people up there.
And there is no amount.
Who narrowly lost to Republican Karen Handel in a runoff in 2017.
That can overcome real grassroots energy like this.
I'm John Ossoff, and I lead a business that investigates corruption for news organizations worldwide. We've exposed sexual
slavery. He likes to tell people about his investigative journalism background.
And it's what I'll do as your senator. That's why I'm refusing donations from corporate PACs.
But in many ways, it's an uphill battle for him because he has a hard time connecting with moderate Democrats and centrists and independents.
And how are Ossoff and Perdue pitching their campaigns?
David Perdue has been one of the toughest fighters.
Perdue is appealing to voters based on his closeness to Trump.
The David Perdue. Now, you know, a lot of people, friends of mine, say, let's have a vote.
At the same time, he's also been very clear that his campaign and this runoff is separate to the election. Ossoff is really centering and focusing around Perdue's perceived corruption.
Well, perhaps Senator Perdue would have been able to respond properly to the COVID-19 pandemic if you hadn't been fending off multiple federal investigations for insider trading.
In the days before he showed up at the state capitol, Republican Senator David Perdue's financial portfolio was very active, all following a private U.S. Senate briefing on the spreading threat of the coronavirus.
How Senator David Perdue has profited from the pandemic while he was downplaying the risk of the coronavirus.
It's not just that you're a crook, Senator. It's that you're attacking the health of the people that you represent?
Perdue, who is one of the wealthier members of the U.S. Senate, has repeatedly said he's done nothing wrong.
Perdue echoed that, saying, I've had an outside professional that manages my personal finances and I'm not involved.
Even though I think The Guardian and other outlets have indicated that he has provided those advisors guidance to some degree. And so Ossoff is campaigning on all of that.
And how is Perdue painting Ossoff?
As a socialist, far left, radical.
He's pushing a radical socialist agenda. He'll be nothing but a rubber stamp to Chuck Schumer. And he says one thing in Atlanta and another in the...
This race has been going on for months now, and there have been some memorable moments. Which ones stand out for you?
So in October, Perdue deliberately mispronounced now Vice President-elect Kamala Harris's name.
Elizabeth and Kamala, I don't know. Whatever.
When you heard Perdue say that, what did you think?
You know, nothing is surprising anymore.
And what stands out is he's been in the Senate for a few years, a colleague of Kamala Harris, even working on some of the same committees.
And what it indicates to me is that Republicans are clutching at straws, if that's the most that they can come up with. And it really set the marker in how their campaign would handle their Democratic opponents.
Back in November, Perdue and Ossoff finished quite close to each other. I mean, obviously close enough to warrant this runoff. But the Republican candidate, Perdue, had a slight edge, just over 80,000 more votes than Ossoff. I mean, I think we all know better than to rely too much on polls. But any indication of who seems to be in the lead?
If you look at the voter turnout from November, Ossoff trailed Perdue significantly. And so based on just those numbers alone, David Perdue has a slight advantage in that case.
The other Senate race in Georgia pits the sitting senator, Republican Kelly Loeffler, who was appointed to take over the seat last year when the previous Republican senator retired, against the Reverend Raphael Warnock, who's a pastor. They're very different candidates, aren't they?
They are. She is about as opposite to her opponent as they come.
Well, if giving lots of money to Republican causes makes you qualified to become Georgia's next U.S. Senator, then businesswoman Kelly Loeffler may be almost overqualified.
She is the richest member of the U.S. Senate. Her $10.5 million mansion in Atlanta has caught the eye of many critics and fans alike. She's married to the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange.
Walmine.com now lists Sprecher's net worth at least $500 million. Which
means... And in 2011...
The other partner with Mary and I is Kelly Loeffler.
She became a co-owner of the Atlanta Dream, the city's WNBA franchise.
I played basketball in high school. And athletics were a way for me to have a view into a bigger world, to set a goal.
And she was praised then in local news stories for supporting women's athletics. Women,
which is where there's a real void, is where this comes in.
But in terms of it hasn't quite worked out as a plus in her column, has it?
No. And so, as you know, this year, there's been a racial reckoning in the United States.
I got a 12-gauge shotgun. It's for me and the rest of my peaceful people.
That is one of the armed protesters in Atlanta, gathered near the Wendy's parking lot last night, where Rayshard Brooks was shot and killed by an officer earlier this month.
And in June, while all that was happening, Kelly Loeffler...
We cannot allow mob rule. We're a nation of the rule of law.
...criticized the Black Lives Matter movement for being a very divisive organization, as she called it.
Divisive organization based on Marxist principles. This week, they threatened to burn the system down literally and figuratively if they don't get what they want. And I had to draw the line. I had
the
to speak out.
WNBA team in a very black city.
And the reaction from the WNBA players that I spoke to was one of shock and disgust that a co-owner of a team in a league that's 80% black women would oppose the Black Lives Matter movement.
They boycotted Kelly Loeffler.
A political statement tonight from members of the Atlanta Dream against their owner. Dream player Elizabeth Williams tweeted this photograph right here wearing a Vote Warnock shirt.
And actively started campaigning and supporting her opponent.
Social media was filled with WNBA players wearing that same shirt tonight.
I mean, it's quite remarkable. Probably not how she envisioned owning a WNBA team would work out for her.
Absolutely not. Potentially that support from the WNBA team could work to put the Reverend ever so slightly in favor in the runoffs.
And can you tell us a little more about Raphael Warnock?
So Reverend Raphael Warnock is a senior pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. It's the same church where Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was once a former pastor. He's a prominent figure in Atlanta's Black community. And importantly, this year, he delivered the eulogy for Rayshard Brooks, who was shot by Atlanta police this summer.
He knew that night that he could lose his liberty. He was afraid of losing it all over again, and afraid of losing his liberty, he lost his life running from a system that too often makes slaves out of people.
He's relatively new to politics, like Kelly Loeffler. He's also said on social media that he is pro-choice.
Reverend, please respond to the abortion issue in particular.
Which is really interesting.
Well, listen, I have a profound reverence for life. The question is, whose decision is it? And I happen to think that a patient's room is too small a place for a woman, her doctor, and the U.S. government. I think that's too many people in the room.
Appealing to the very suburban white women that Loeffler was also meant to appeal to when she was appointed in January.
I mean, what are these two candidates saying about each other?
Kelly Loeffler has spent a lot of time,
you know, my opponent, radical liberal Raphael Warnock,
calling the Reverend
Senator, you have 30 seconds.
A radical liberal.
Well, predictably, you've just heard more lies from radical liberal Raphael Warnock.
Radical Raphael Warnock, dangerous for America.
I'm Kelly Loeffler. I approve this message.
Well, he...
Listen, the remarkable thing is that somebody like me is even running for the United States Senate.
Is campaigning to, quote unquote, the ordinary people in Georgia.
I'm a kid who grew up in public housing down in Savannah, Georgia. I'm one of 12 children. I'm running for the U.S. Senate to give
ordinary people
a chance.
But they're wondering, when in the world are they going to get some COVID-19 relief? They haven't gotten any from Kelly Loeffler in months.
Highlighting that she has also, like Senator David Perdue, engaged in contentious, potentially insider stock trading.
Records show Loeffler and her husband sold stock valued between $1.3 and $3.1 million in the
profiting
weeks
before
the market tanked.
Who does that?
In this case, back in November, Warnock, the Democratic candidate, was in the lead with just more than 300,000 votes than Loeffler had. But that was a bit of a strange primary because there were actually two Republicans on the ticket, so that might have split the vote a little bit. How are things looking this time?
So polls have shown they're quite close and at points overlapped in their support, almost splitting voters down the line. In recent weeks, though, Warnock has had a very ever so slight advantage, about 2% up from Loeffler.
Coming up, how Georgia's history of voter suppression could factor into this race. The backdrop to this runoff is, of course, this massive fight over the access to vote that's run on for years and years.
Amid record-breaking early voting this midterm season, concerns of voter suppression and who has the right to vote are at the center of some of the country's most contested races.
Tell me a little bit about how and why Democrats have made voter registration such a priority in Georgia.
Democrats and some pundits have believed for some time that a rapidly diversifying electorate would allow them to be competitive in Georgia, but repeated voter suppression efforts had kept that electorate from fully forming. When I covered the 2018 gubernatorial race for The Guardian,
as the state's hotly contested race for governor is locked in a virtual tie, and at the center of the race, a contentious fight over who gets to cast ballots.
I remember the NAACP called what happened in Georgia that year, quote, textbook voter suppression.
32% Black. The Associated Press reports that Black voters make up 70% of the applications currently on hold by Kemp's office. Kemp's faced backlash after his office tried to close 7 of 9 polling places in a predominantly poor black county in southwest Georgia this summer.
Stacey Abrams losing her race to Governor Brian Kemp by 50,000 votes and missing a runoff by 18,000 votes.
I acknowledge that former Secretary of State Brian Kemp will be certified as the victor in the 2018 gubernatorial election.
When Stacey Abrams admitted defeat.
But to watch an elected official who claims to represent the people in this state baldly pin his hopes for election on the suppression of the people's democratic right to vote has been truly appalling.
She mentioned that 1.5 million voters were purged from the rolls, more than 50,000 put on a pending registration list, more than 200 polling places were closed, thousands of mail-in ballots were rejected, and waits to vote, I remember that day, were up to 5 hours, if not longer.
So let's be clear. This is not a speech of concession. Because concession means to acknowledge an action is right, true, or proper. As a woman of conscience and faith, I cannot concede that.
And since then, she has campaigned and mobilized voters for the Democrats.
It was no walk in the park when Georgians cast their ballots on June 9th.
And then, in this past June, in the presidential primary, voting machines malfunctioned. 80 more polling places were closed in Metro Atlanta. Again, thousands of mail-in ballots never arrived or rejected, and wait times at predominantly Black and Latino precincts were more than 6 times longer than in majority white areas.
So I'm very disappointed after being a voter for over 50 years. It's getting worse, worse, and worse. It can't get any worse than this.
So people are keeping a really close eye on all of this again.
But in some ways, what happened in Georgia this year was a bit of a success story for Democrats, wasn't it? What impact have grassroots efforts had?
This state has seen its highest turnout in 40 years. Victory for Democrats was possible in part because Black grassroots organizers, one of them being Stacey Abrams, mobilized so many of Georgia's Black voters.
So it seems pretty remarkable what these organizers have done, even despite a pandemic, despite a recession, two things which I imagine would really make it harder for people to go out and vote. But looking ahead to January, turnout tends to be pretty low in special elections that aren't at the normal time of year.
You're going to vote in the Senate election.
The Guardian's Southern Bureau Chief Oliver Lachlan has been following some of these activists who've been trying to register Democratic voters on the ground. That's Cliff Albright, who leads a group called Black Votes Matter, trying to get the vote out for this runoff. How optimistic or worried were the activists you spoke to?
One of the Democratic activists, Anjali Anjetti, who mobilizes Asian American voters, many of them first-time voters, in the Atlanta suburbs.
Obviously, we were really, really excited about Georgia turning blue. That's the understatement.
She told me that voter turnout among Asian American voters went up by 90%.
Asian Americans almost doubled their turnout. It's ridiculous. You know, we're really excited that we might have contributed to the margin between Biden and Trump, but we need to get everybody to the polls. And in fact, we need to get even more people to the polls than we got for the presidential election.
One of the issues she thinks is that many of the people she spoke to, they think Joe Biden is now president-elect and it's done.
We found through our phone banking this past weekend that not everybody knows that they have to vote again. So that to me is the biggest barrier because they're raring to vote. They just don't know how to do it because they're not able to find out the information as easily because of everything else that's going on with our Secretary of State. So we basically have to fill the job that our state government isn't doing in order to educate voters.
This is usually information that's provided by the Secretary of State's office, but he has been otherwise indisposed by multiple recounts and defending his state election officials against President Trump's vitriol.
You've also been talking to Republican organizers. What are they saying?
So I spoke to Debbie Dooley, who is the founder of the Atlanta Tea Party, and she mentioned that she thought there were shenanigans that happened and that the Democrats cheated.
You know, I am deeply concerned about voter fraud. Deeply concerned. I think there will always be a question mark in the back of especially Republican voters' minds. And I think because of that, there will be no unity in this country, because I think a lot of Trump supporters are going to treat Joe Biden the way the left treated Trump for the past 4 years.
Because of that, she's seen a momentum among Republican organizers in recent weeks, which is, in her opinion, unprecedented.
I mean, during the general election, during the whole, like, 3 month time period, I had one team visit my door. During this runoff, during the past 5 days, I have had two different teams of people with two different Republican groups actually visit me.
So the Republican organizers are fired up, but what about Republican voters? One thing I've been wondering about this race is whether Republicans feel that it's important to vote in this runoff, or if all the president's talk about fraud is going to backfire in some way, and they're going to think, well, why bother?
Lauren Voiles.
How do I spell that?
That was one thing that our colleague Ollie heard from voters at a recent Trump rally in Valdosta, Georgia.
Are you going to be voting in the Senate election?
If they do a special session and give us a clean election with paper ballots, IDs, and fingerprints, but I'm not doing Dominion machines. And
so you won't
these.
Vote?
Huh?
So you won't vote in the, unless they change it, which doesn't sound
yeah,
like
yeah, otherwise it's crooked.
Did you vote in 20...
What are you hearing from Republicans?
So that's interesting, and that's definitely something that we're hearing on the ground. But many of the Republicans that I spoke to in the past few weeks say they're all going to vote.
There's a tremendous amount of anger out there among Republicans. And it's just a sense of urgency that I see now. And I think Republican voters, if they have to crawl across broken glass on their hands and knees to vote, they're going to show up at the polls and vote.
Can you go ahead and give me your first and last name?
One of the voters I talked to, Charlotte, lives in the Atlanta suburbs. She voted for Trump, but has been a Democrat most of her life.
And Charlotte, you only want me to use her first name?
That is correct, please. Okay.
She didn't want us to use her last name, also where she lives specifically, because she didn't want her neighbors to know that she was a Trump supporter. She's worried she wouldn't be able to get a job, which I thought
wow.
was super fascinating. And she wants a Republican-led Senate to complement the Democratic leadership in the White House.
Just like a marriage, I think, you know, husband and wife, they complement each other. And I see our political system that way. I really feel that it's important to have a mix. And therefore, I think it is really critical that, you know, the Republicans do keep the Senate in January.
That's so interesting. Just how much outside money and energy is pouring into this race?
A lot. Republicans always accuse Democrats of using outside influence and resources and money to sort of create sort of a circus. But this time, a recent Bloomberg report said that Republicans have taken in 400% more cash into Georgia races than Democrats.
And 400%?
Mm-hmm. Republican donors gave $95 million to their party Senate and party committee between Election Day and November 23rd. And that's four times as much as the Democrats.
Wow.
Yeah. To put it quite bluntly, there is a lot of money and influence flooding the Georgia Senate races right now.
I mean, this is probably going to be one of the most high-profile Senate races in decades. In-person voting kicked off earlier this week. Ballots ultimately close on January 5th. Kushboo, what will you be watching for between now and then?
So I think one thing that I would keep an eye on is early voting. So coming into this runoff, voting rights groups were really upset when a key county that went to Joe Biden for the first time in 40 years. said it was closing more than half of its early voting sites because, as they argued, not many people vote in Senate runoffs. But as you know, as we all know, it's an unprecedented election year, and that may not be the case. But they have then, now in recent days, tweaked their plan. More than half will still remain open, but they will still have fewer locations. So voting rights advocates worry that this will deter people, many of them usually being in communities of color. You know, having lived here through a number of elections, the issue around voter registration and voter rights and talk about voter suppression is still at the forefront of this runoff.
And when you think about what all this means for the future of Georgia, what happens after the dust settles on this election?
What we're seeing right now is the beginning of a very, very divisive period in Georgia. You hear from a lot of voters that they cannot fathom a political environment where they will be able to reach across this divide. And so right now, Georgia becomes truly what people have wanted to call it, a battleground. And that battleground will continue into people's homes and into their communities for a long, long time.
Kushboo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for today. My thanks to Kushboo Shah and Oliver Lachland. Do follow The Guardian's reporting on the Georgia runoff, including dispatches from Ollie and Sam Levine, and reporting from the Fuller Project at theguardian.com. We should also note that neither David Perdue nor Kelly Loeffler have had charges formally brought against them in connection with their stock trades, and all Justice Department investigations have been dropped. This episode was produced by Rose DeLarabidi and me, Mythili Rao. Sound design by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.